It's the Almost Perfect Podcast.
Welcome to the Almost Perfect Podcast, a celebration of fuck-ups, failures, and falling flat on your face. This is a podcast that believes you can learn from experience, but that experience doesn't have to be your own. Hi, I'm Bob Perfect, and I'm a functional fuck-up. Let's learn from somebody else's mistakes. And today we're learning from Luiso Madinga. Now, you know who Luiso is. You've seen him on Netflix. I'm sure you saw him on The Comedians of the World. He had a half-hour special on that came out earlier this year. If you didn't see him on that, you probably saw him on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. He is the African correspondent there. Before that, you probably saw him on Late Night News with Luiso Gola. And probably Bantu Hour and the various different TV shows that have come out. He was also on Trevor Noah's original Nation Wild, although he didn't get to do the recording because he was out of town at that time. But yeah, Luiso Madinga is one of South Africa's probably more successful comedians. He's, you know, well known, especially amongst us comedians. We know who he is. And, you know, if you're a comedy fan in South Africa, you no doubt know who Luiso Madinga is. But turns out there aren't that many comedy fans in South Africa, because Luiso will tell you that it's starting to feel like not that many people actually know him here. Or at least not enough people know him here to fill up the theatres that he wants to be able to fill up, and to, yeah, make this comedy thing really, really, really work for him. And that sounds like a bit of a fucked up statement to make about one of the most successful comedians in South Africa. But once you start listening to this podcast, you are going to learn some things about it, what it means to be a comedian in South Africa and what it means to be successful at it. And I don't think you're going to want to do stand-up comedy. If you were someone who's like, I want to get into stand-up comedy, this is going to be the perfect podcast for me to learn how to do that. I want to follow Luiso Madinga's path and, you know, become as successful and famous as him. Well, then you also might have to deal with some of the issues that Luiso is dealing with at the moment. And I'm going to let him tell you what those issues are, because damn, I wasn't expecting it, man. I was expecting this conversation to be one of the ones where, you know, it's someone who's just had like an amazing career and everything is just going swimmingly for them. And it is. Like, it's not joke. Luiso's career is amazing, but it does have some problems, and you are going to learn about them in this conversation. Now, this probably sounds a little weird at the moment compared to most of the intros. It's because I'm doing it off my little Zoom, which I brought up here to Joburg. And yes, I am still in Joburg. I'm recording this in my mom's spare room at the moment. There's rain, there's birds, there's a dog coming and greeting me here at the moment. And yeah, it's been an interesting week and a half up here in Joburg. I managed to get a couple interviews done that I'm very happy with. And I can't wait to share with you. I've also got one or two more set up that I'm looking forward to as well. But I got to perform at the Mulville Comedy Club last week for 3 nights. And I had a really good time. I got to meet a few comedians who I hadn't met yet and who I've, you know, known on the internet, as well as a few different people who I've known from the internet and never actually had the pleasure of being introduced to in real life. And this weekend was a lot of that. I got to meet so many different people who I've never met before and had the absolute best time, honestly. I had such a good weekend of just hanging out and talking shit and doing lots and lots of tequila. So many tequilas we had this weekend. So shout outs to everyone who bought me a tequila and who just, you know, cracked some jokes with me and had a good time with me, because that's, you know, what life is all about, I guess. So this is a podcast that I wasn't really expecting it to go this way, but in a way I'm really grateful it did, and I'm really grateful for Luiso, grateful to Luiso for sharing, you know, this with us, for sharing some of the things that he's dealing with at the moment with us, because, you know, you wouldn't expect it. You wouldn't, like, looking at his career, you would think, you know, he's the most confident, top of the world kind of guy who's got it all together, and it appears that it's not quite that way. And for someone who's definitely, you know, not at the top of the hill, but faces some similar issues, faces some similar doubts that he has, it's so comforting in a weird way to know that, yeah, that even though, you know, some people's careers might be further along than yours, it's not like those insecurities that you have go away It's not like the troubles, you know, about your work, the stuff that you think about yourself, you know, suddenly changes just because you get a little bit of success. And so I think this podcast is going to be really helpful for various different people. And I think in a few years, Lisa might look back on it and go, yo, that was quite something. I can't believe I told you guys all of that. But once again, I'm incredibly grateful that he did. I'm not going to talk for too long because, like I said, I think this sounds a little bit weird on this just coming at you just off the Zoom. I'm going to let you know a few things. Shout outs to Jay Tweak, who is the latest to sign up to the Patreon. Fuck. How do I fuck that up after nearly a year of doing this? But anyway, he's just signed up to the Patreon as a new patron. So shout outs to Jay Tweak. Bah, 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 bah. Everyone give your hands up for Jay Tweak, who's someone I actually want to interview for this podcast. That dude was DJing since the age of like 14 in clubs. He can play off drum and bass of four different decks at the same time. It's phenomenal. So that someone that talented is supporting this podcast really warms my heart. So shout out to you, Jay Tweak. And if you want to be a patron on the Patreon accounts, go over to patreon.com/almostperfect. That is a way that you can support this podcast for as little as $1 a month. At the moment, what I'm doing with that money is I'm putting it into a little fixed deposit account. And then in about 4 more months, that's going to mature. And then I can buy one of my other mics is broken and blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to buy more equipment and slowly but surely build up my studio at home and turn it into like a proper recording studio. And then maybe even, you know, hire it out to other people. Let more podcasts be created in Durban and that sort of vibe. So that's the plan there. But just in general, if you go over to Patreon, you'll also know about guests beforehand. You'll get to ask them questions if you want to. Not many people have taken that option up. I think some of you are just giving me money for free, and I totally appreciate that. But if you do want to interact, if you do want to do more, if you do want to suggest guests, or you want to ask those guest questions, then you can do so over at the Patreon. Other ways you can support the podcast is on iTunes or Apple. You just go leave stars there. And you can also leave a review. I would greatly appreciate if you do that, because it really helps with the whole SEO stuff on iTunes or Apple, and, you know, helps get up the rankings a little bit more, which will help more people see the podcast. And also, if they see the podcast, then maybe they'll even click play and then they'll get to hear the podcast, which is kind of the goal. On all other platforms as well, obviously liking it, subscribing to it, you know, interacting with the podcast in a positive manner helps the algorithms know that maybe someone else should listen to this podcast too. We are on Facebook at the Almost Perfect Podcast, and we're also on Twitter at @almost_podcast. Other than that, yeah, you can find us probably on almost any streaming service out there, except for SoundCloud and YouTube, but it's all the rest of them, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Breaker, I think, all of them, you can find us. So go on to your favorite podcasting app if you're not currently on your favorite podcasting app, and please hit subscribe. Other than that, I think that's it. I've got nothing else to really announce at the moment. No more gigs lined up for the next little while. I'm going to take a break until next year. And then I've got some ideas. I've got some things in the works. And I'll share that with you as soon as I know exactly what's going on. Other than that, the next few days are dedicated to getting a few more of these podcasts in the bag. And then, sharing those conversations with you. So once again, I want to thank you for tuning in, listening to this Almost Perfect podcast. And I want to thank Lisa one more time just for sharing, you know, some of the things he shares with us on this podcast. Because like I say, man, Lisa's status in the public, I would assume, is pretty high. Like, I assume your motherfuckers think, you know, he's the coolest motherfucker out there. And so, yeah, for him to break that, you know, perception, I guess, by being really, really honest, is something I really appreciate. So without further ado, here comes the Almost Perfect podcast with Luiso Madinga. So how you living, Luiso?
I'm living, baby.
Just living.
I'm good. You know what? When you tally everything up, it's good.
Oh, that doesn't sound good, though. That sounds like you've been having a little bit of a rough time. When you got to tally the stuff up, it's usually because you've had a bit of a cuck time, but you look back at everything and you're like, you know what? My life's still good.
Yeah, I've been having a cuck time inside my own head. And also just like, I've been stuck in that shitty mentality of focusing on where you want to be and not where you, not being just being where you are.
But where do you get? How do you get to where you want to be if you don't focus on that?
No, you must know where you want to be and then focus on doing what you need to do now and understanding where you are now. And sometimes you get lost just staring at where you want to be.
Yeah, because also the process isn't always that enjoyable.
No. No, the process can be flipping awful. Like, especially now with I won't say South African comedy is taking a dip. There's a certain section of comedy that's taking a dip. I think it's really great seeing the Vinax scene on this major meteoric rise
where everything is, especially since it's South Africa.
Yeah, especially since South Africa. And where everything's kind of coming together, where all the mediums are coming together to kind of like 10x the thing. So, you know, guys are appearing on TV and on radio and in all these mediums that just make it seem bigger and bigger and bigger and allowing the guys to do bigger and bigger things. But the other section, obviously the sections that we're playing in...
The club comics.
The club comics are... There's something wrong with the culture. And it's permeating beyond just how we deal with each other. I think it's the way audiences are perceiving us and are just experiencing us. I think audiences can feel there's something lacking.
What do you mean?
It's when the audiences come out now, they're not experiencing what I would call a curated show where I feel like shows aren't put together properly. You're not having a strong opener, then your open spot act, and then another guy who really can carry a show, and then a big closer, which is a formula that it's not just a... There's a reason why it's done all around the world.
Yeah.
Right? There's a reason why. Now I'm seeing shows where I'm like, why is that person closing? Why? Because he deserves a chance? It's like, no, we're not in the game of... It's his
That's
time.
Fine, and like... gigs that are set up specifically for that, but not like...
No, yeah. If you're going to Kitchener's New Material Night, it's called Kitchener's New Material Night.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter who opens or closes, we're all here for maybe it's funny. That's what we're here for. We're here for maybe it's funny. But hopefully. When I've paid my 50 to 100 bucks and you told me you're putting on a show, please put on a show.
Yeah, because then you do have open micers and people who aren't necessarily on that level, you know, trying to do 10, trying to do 15, when they've only got 5. And
they barely have 5.
And that's, I definitely understand how that can affect audiences' trust in a show.
Yes.
And they don't necessarily want to come back because...
It's that thing Louis talks about. It's a lot to come to a show.
Yeah.
You've already had a day, a full day. Then you have to get dressed... Get in your car, get across town, find parking, get harassed by car guards who want you to pay them up front. And then you got to get to a show that was shit.
And potentially get mugged on the way in or out.
Do you know what I mean, bro? Yeah. So I just feel like... And the comics don't also perform.
You think comics don't respect the audience?
Yeah, comics are in their ego right now. Comics are definitely in their ego. And undeservedly most of the time. It's just like, I don't know why you have an ego. You haven't done anything deserving of an ego. I know you think you're on a big stage because you're on a stage with Lois Ogola. And it's like, no, when Lois Ogola's on, it's his stage and you don't matter anymore. So don't think that you were on the stage with him. It's like, I've seen people's bios, like, I performed with Lois Ogola at such and such. It's like, no one remembers you were there.
I actually want to ask you about that because that's something I see that's kind of interesting and it's something I've never really done. I will not say who I've opened for as a thing of promoting myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like that's selling yourself short. Like, if you say, I was opening act for Lois Ogola, you're immediately telling people...
I'm not Lois Ogola.
Yeah.
Look, it can work for you because corporates, from a corporate perspective, it'll work for you.
Sure. Because they need name recognition.
Because they need name recognition and... and sometimes it is like it's a big thing sometimes to open up for somebody at a certain level in your career. Fine,
sure.
Use it. But I think it's when it starts affecting your attitude is when I get upset about it. Like, say what you want to say in your bio, but this is a job. it's a fuck, you're damn lucky to be doing it. Treat it like that every single step of the way. Like, there is no time I jump on stage and I look down on opening act, because that guy can crush harder than I will that night.
Yeah, a lot that of night, it yeah. can't happen because yeah. you know they're really fucking trying.
They're really trying, bro. And so I walk on every night and go, we're here to put on. We're all here because we're all going to be experienced as one show.
Yeah.
So let's all do what we need to do to make sure this show is going well. Like last night, I was at a gig where the host was struggling.
And that's never a fun gig.
So by the time I closed well. But then he still wants to do another five after me.
After you've closed. So you've killed it like now.
He's not thinking about the show.
Because it's ended on a high.
It's ended on a high. And he brought them when I say right down, it felt like we're in a TED talk. Everyone was looking at their watches throughout. So it's those kind of things where people's egos are affecting how people experience the show, because they're not seeing the show anymore. Like I remember one day when we were doing Nationwide, I think I just did a joke that was similar to a joke that Trevor had, and then at the back.
Wait, did you do it before him or after?
I think he just had a joke.
Okay.
And I didn't see him. I hadn't been watching. Like, there was six of us on this tour.
Yeah, of course.
And also Trevor changes his set so much. If you miss the one, you don't know that he did the joke. So I did this joke, and then Eugene shirts on us at the back. Like, you guys aren't even thinking about the show. We're all here. You can't do a Bollywood joke when Trevor just did a Bollywood. When Trevor has a Bollywood joke,
that unless messes you up reference the flow. It, but, yeah.
Yeah. But there was. I didn't get his anger that night. I still don't get it. But I remember just him saying, you guys aren't thinking about the show. And I've always thought about that. Like, oh, it's a thing we're all a part of. We're not separate from each other doing the thing.
Yeah, but very few comedians think about the whole show. Like, you don't get into comedy as a it's not a team sport, bro. Like, nobody gets into comedy because they're team players. Like, yeah. Almost everyone gets into comedy because they're loners, because they're
yes, but you're not going to... But
that's what I'm saying. Like, so that's why that ego thing happens. It's because people get into it because they're individuals, and then they don't realize that they're now in a situation where you actually are a part of a team.
Yes,
yes, you're coming with your own individual bit, mm-hmm. but together creates this cohesive, you know, show that's
yes.
like a great experience sometimes for the audience.
Yeah.
But did you never have like issues with your own ego? Like, have you not?
Oh yeah. Like, oh, for sure.
Have you not had shows suffer because you thought you were too good?
I've had shows suffer because here are the lessons I hate having to learn a lesson more than once. One, be prepared. Like, I hate having to learn that lesson more than once. It bothers me every time I'm not. Like, I know.
It's exciting not to be sometimes.
Yes. I don't know. It's like, when I say prepared, it's stay aware. Sometimes it's like not about knowing exactly what you're going to say, but walk into the space, see what it is. You've seen the comics come up before you, read
the room. Yeah.
That's preparation.
Yeah.
But to just walk on and ramble what you wanted to say without thinking about the audience and stuff, I hate when I can't sleep after that.
But you've been there before.
I've been there and I hate that. I fucking hate it. And then also the ego of thinking that people know you.
I can imagine for you it must be such a weird experience because you've been on international TV. Like, you've been on local TV, you've been on radio, you've been on, you know, like you're a known comic almost. But at the same time, being a known comic in South Africa is almost irrelevant because, you know, most people in the country to probably still don't know who Lisa Gola is. Like,
yeah.
If you had to poll all 47 million, 49 million South Africans.
Very few know.
Yeah. And he, like, most people know Trevor at this point.
Yes.
But other than that, so I can imagine it must be this weird, like, thing of, like, you know, like, aren't I famous yet?
Fuck, bro. fucking fame in this country. If you, it's, I've always thought to myself, I don't care for fame.
It's a useful tool in our industry.
It's a currency.
Yeah.
I've always thought of fame as a currency. It allows you to make certain things happen for the thing that you're actually trying to do. Which for me is...
Do you worry about the costs of fame? Personal costs? Since it's
I worry about my time. Because to be famous, I have to do certain other things that I just don't have the passion for.
Like radio interviews and shit.
Like radio interviews or be having a radio show or, you know what I mean, or being on SABC
you
type TV.
You wouldn't want a radio show.
I'm not that interested.
TV show?
I'd rather act than be like that person. Like, hey, it's such and such a show with Lois and Madinga. Nah. Like, I recently did a thing with Dylan Oliphant, yeah, where I interviewed him like in his part of town. It was really great.
Eldorado Park.
Yeah,
yeah. Listeners to the podcast shit though, that.
Yeah. I mean, Eldos. Whoop whoop. And really interesting. Like, I found it mad interesting, the stories were telling me and whatever. And then I recently heard him on Mojack's podcast.
Oh yeah? Tell us more
with Mojack.
Yeah, go listen to it. It's a pretty good podcast.
And I was like, oh, that's what it's supposed to sound like. I literally heard like, oh, that's like, yeah, but he's...
Yeah, even me, I listen to Mojack and I'm like, oh, fuck you. But I've got my style and people like it for what it is.
No, but you also...
people like it, but...
you're also really good. I listen... Wow. What was that what was that one episode that I... Was
it
episode
to
about...
Neil's in my podcast.
Was Neil in yours? I tweeted about it.
I think so. Which one was it? The Comics Choice Awards one?
It might have been that. There was a beef. It was something about beef in the industry.
That was two of the Durban comics. Like,
yes,
I didn't want to talk about
that.
That
thing was... That episode was...
Hilarious.
That thing is for the archives.
Right. That was all
it is a moment
though.
In time.
That man and I, we've got another podcast. We just haven't recorded one in a while. But like,
really,
I love. Yeah, Neil and I. Like,
Neil
Neil's also one of those people who, like, I'm friends with in comedy. You know, we don't
even
perform together.
Top
like,
three comics in South Africa.
Yeah. I mean, I'll name my top three quite happily: Lisa Gola, Carvin Goldstone, Neil Green.
Yeah, that's my
favorite.
Easy. I mean, like, I don't think we can dispute those.
I mean, I also like Cecil Ladiga quite a bit, but I haven't seen him perform in quite a while, and he's more
he's
in the
done.
Yeah.
I think he's done with
more
comedy.
On the TV producing side of things. So you would rather act?
If I was to be on TV, yeah. I've always loved acting. It was my first love, actually, was acting. Something I have actually now started pursuing probably. Like, I started acting classes again.
At varsity or just like
a private tutor.
Any methods in particular they're teaching you?
I'm like, it's a beginning because I didn't study this shit, so just basic things that really go a long way, and they've already helped me, like how to TV act, which is totally different to theatre acting. Because it's less, it's like you do so much less with your body and your face, and so much with your voice. Like, my voice acting is, hopefully is improved. Because I do a lot of voiceovers, and I've noticed since taking those classes, like, I can do, my range has improved in terms of what I can do. That's the space I'm really, really enjoying right now.
Okay, dope. Yeah. And, well, then why did you get into comedy if acting was the thing that you were originally passionate about?
I love comedy, too. Like, I truly... Comedy for me is like, it's like, I've said it once and I've said it, it's magic.
I say the same thing. It's literally
magic.
But I see it as magic, like as in the art form magic. Like, I see it as the exact same as that. And I see magic, the art form, as magic. Like, as well.
I see comedy as magic in that it's inexplicable. Like, magic.
See, I see it as magic in that it's a trick.
You think so?
Comedy, of course it's a trick.
I don't know what the trick is.
It's rug pulls. It's constantly misleading people. It's constantly...
No, but you could tell...
Look over here.
You could tell someone that, but can they do it?
No.
That's the... and I think the magic lies in me is the effect of it, is that I can induce
an involuntary
spasming of your body through ideas. I just think that's just a crazy, and there's no actual science that we know behind it. You and I are working off this instinct that we have,
and also other people's experiences and what we enjoy. And like, yeah, like
for sure. Everyone's funny.
Well, everyone can be funny at any point, like in life.
Yeah, everyone has made other people laugh in some way, but to go, I will make people laugh consistently, and that's the only. You came here for one reaction, and that's laughter, and that I will deliver for you. Is such an arrogant. It's such an arrogant thing to even think you can do.
It does take some balls.
It takes some delusion.
That's what I say every time people are like, "You're so brave." I'm like, my ego is just fucked up.
The way my ego. Because I have low self-esteem, but I really have.
I need your approval.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of smart, and I need you to tell me I'm kind of smart.
Yeah.
By laughing at these ideas that I have. Like these tricks of language.
So I love it, man. I've always loved jokes. I remember even just in the library at school had joke books.
Oh, yes.
I used to be like who are these genius humans? To this day, I had street jokes. I'm just like, I don't know how people would do this.
What's your favorite joke, like that you haven't written?
It's longish.
Okay, can you? I mean, go for it.
I'll tell you the short version. So, God makes Adam and Eve. Well, he makes Adam, puts him in the garden, and he's having a great time. But after a while, he gets bored. So God is like, okay, this guy needs a partner. Makes Eve, and Adam's having a great time showing around. You know, like, hey, this is this, and this is a tree, and this is a lion, and this is. And having a great time, and after a while she gets it, and they get bored. And so God's like, okay, I'll teach them about sex. So he sits them down, teaches them about sex. And they're like, okay, let's try this thing out. And they start going. And this thing is they are going for hours, just rep. Like, they're the first. This is the they are going at it. After like a full day of romping. Eve is like, I need a break. I need to take a walk. So it's like she like stretches her legs. She goes for a walk in the garden. She gets to the stream, and then she starts cleaning herself up. She starts washing, and then she starts. God happens to be walking through the garden, and he sees her, and he's like, "No! Ah, I'll never get that smell out of the fish."
That's your favorite joke.
It's my favorite joke.
What about it? Is it? Is it the long setup? Is it the?
It's just the. I love taking things that are just so mundane, as that stupid thing of.
It smells like fish.
And the whole joke, it's been a classic thing, and this joke just goes, no, fish smells like it. And I'm just like, that's just great. I don't know why, bro. I don't question jokes. Once I've laughed. I accept it.
Yeah, I'm like, my favorite joke is, time flies like an arrow, fruit flies like a banana.
Time flies like a?
Like an arrow, fruit flies like a banana. Because of fruit flies. Oh,
Jesus Christ. Okay. Moving swiftly along.
That to me is just like one of the like best written like jokes I've ever seen in my life.
That's cool.
Like, I just... So yeah. That's the thing. So for me, it's like it's all in the writing. It's all like... I love like Anthony Jeselnik stuff because it's just so like well written.
What is his opener? His opener for his last special.
Which special was it?
This very last Netflix one.
Oh fuck! I don't know. I haven't seen it.
It's one. It's such a great. Just like a. It's one of those where you're just like, oh, we're in.
He's just all about that word economy.
Yeah, yeah.
But like at the same time, I love watching other people. Because so for me, when I write, because it's that Ernest Hemingway shit of just like write as little as possible. You know, like the least amount of words you can possibly use. And I write like that in general. So
yes.
When I write articles, like I try not to be superfluous.
Yes.
you know, it's part of the point of the stuff.
Yes.
But I also, like, absolutely love when other people can tell stories. Like, that joke you told, it's like, you know, long setup and you're hooked the whole time.
Yeah.
I just can't do that. Like, I feel so uncomfortable telling a joke like
really?
That. Yeah, like, I'm like, they're waiting. Like, they, like, and they're, each time that builds, people are, like, worried about, is the punchline actually
going
to be funny?
That's yeah. the worst. I know comics who have the longest setups. And maybe the punchline is good, but it's now buried underneath the setup.
Yeah.
It's like just the sound of it is muffled by all this padding you've put around it.
Just jerking off beforehand,
basically. Yeah. You jerked off before you. And yeah, that's definitely, I've noticed people, I think people just watched too much. People have watched too many greats have fun doing an hour where they have time.
And they don't realize
you can't do that in a comedy. Like, I'm not here for your 2-minute setup for a pun. I fucking hate puns.
You hate puns?
I hate a set of puns.
Okay, fair enough.
I know people who literally do a set of puns. And yeah. It's like, there's time for a pun now and then. There's a little... They can be fun. I've got some puns in my shows.
Yeah, wordplay's great.
But when people are just like, oh, is this all you do? Jesus, bro, we all can find words with more than one meaning.
That's kind of I do feel similar to you. And like, I feel like people are going to hate on us for this. No shade, but you do you. That's the kind of comedy you want to do. Do it. But it has always kind of felt like looking at a thesaurus, you know?
Like, yes. Yeah. I just listened to a thesaurus for 10 minutes.
Yeah. And it's like, that's cool. But then also a lot of puns are...
Every time I get onto a podcast, I feel like I'm just venting.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but getting that way...
I'm sorry. I'm a very positive person.
You are. You can be, especially online. One of the things you're always saying is nobody cares, work harder. Does that not feel like a way to get exploited?
I think the word harder just is also just...
Misinterpreted,
because sometimes it's about learning how not to be screwed over, and people aren't willing to work on other parts of their careers, you know. So people go, oh, I don't get enough opportunities in this. So I'm not saying work hard as in like write more and more and more jokes. I go, okay, maybe you should need to work harder on your image, or maybe you need to work harder on creating spaces for yourself.
Okay.
Maybe there's so many ways to work
harder.
But people just think it means grind harder,
yeah.
Work later. And then it's like, no.
And that's not healthy.
That's not healthy, because then it's repeating the same thing over and over to get the same results. So work harder is sometimes you just got to be more than one person for a part in your career.
Yeah.
You know? So just do that, because... Because no, it's weird. Once you start doing certain things for yourself, somebody arrives.
And says, can I do this for you?
Can I do this for you? Yeah.
So you're in that position now.
I'm having more people approach me now at this point and saying, let me be your person in this and that, or whatever. Let's work together in this and that.
Is that gratifying? Does that feel like, is that like a thing where you feel a bit more like you've made it?
Made it is such a weird concept.
I know.
I think made it for me is the opportunity to do more work. And when people want to do work with you, that's a great sign for me. So when a photographer goes, yo, we need to do a shoot together of something, that for me is like, oh, we get to create something else. It's not, oh, we get to be glamorous.
Yeah.
I go, oh, we get to be creative. I hope we can do something that creates a new piece of art or whatever, and we put that out. So, because it's comedy and performance is a lifelong thing, so there's no need to think that you've made it, because also you can, if Brad Pitt doesn't work for the next 20 years, Brad Pitt is done. It's not like we're not sitting there 20 years going, Brad Pitt's doing well, huh? You know what I mean?
I
it's like he still has to put out fucking work.
Well, of course.
So it's the opportunity to work that's important.
So you don't see like a point in your career where you might just feel like, cool, I'm done, I've done enough now. Do you feel like you're gonna carry on? Because I've chatted to some people and they're like, yeah, you know, like I've already got so much in me, and then I'm like done with this thing. Whereas I'm like, I can see myself on stage when I'm 80. You know?
Yeah,
like,
me too.
I feel like that's when I'm gonna be like good.
Yeah. Like, I think that's the thing, when people like young, especially the younger guys, which, I mean, like it's just not knowing what the industry is, and like it won't be long before they realize
and how long it takes
to how long it takes to do anything.
How long have you been in this
for? So I've been doing it for 7.5 years now.
Shit, dude, your career is great for 7.5
yeah,
years.
Yeah,
in.
No, it's moved fast.
Fuck.
I won't lie.
I thought you were like 10 or so.
So
years
see, that's in. Where my anxiety comes from, because I know, and you and I know, where I am in my career.
Yeah.
Where
it's pretty far along.
On paper, it looks it is far along, but in terms of the craft, I know where I am. And I am 5%, and I'm being generous when I say I am 5% of the comic I wish to be one day.
5%?
Yeah, bruh. I can poke holes in everything.
Wow. I would say like I'm 20% of the comic I'd like to be, and I'm a shit comic. So like, yeah. I don't know, like 5% is underselling yourself.
No, man, I just love, when I watch Stuart Lee's comedy.
Stuart Lee is a god to me,
he's a god, bruh.
Like what that guy does,
it's insane.
It's unreal, dude. Like, I'm so glad you brought him up, because that dude I can watch forever and just go, how are you doing
he
this?
He is so like, good, I don't laugh.
Because you're in awe.
I'm just in awe. I'm literally just watching, I'm just like, I'm enjoying this so immensely, but laughter just is not enough.
And he likes dividing the crowd. Like,
yes. He's, oh, man. So I go,
I get you.
That's where comedy can be. Where am I?
Nowhere near that.
So far. And there are moments where like I'll have like one joke in an hour where I go, I wish I was that joke for an hour. You know what I mean?
I know how you feel there,
so
man.
Until I can be, so in an hour, I am a 30-second joke. So I am a 5% of a comic I want to be.
Fair enough, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I get you. Well done, you did the maths on it and everything. Oh, man.
So the anxiety comes from that, is to get attention at a point where you're like,
don't feel like you're good enough.
I don't feel good enough for that attention. But I have to also go, the world is huge, no one knows you, keep working.
It's also, there's a lot more people who aren't on your level who do think they are and are pushing for it and get those opportunities because they think they are.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like The Emperor's New Clothes perfectly describes the entertainment industry a lot of the time.
Yes.
You know, like, it's more about like the perception, like people can be naked and everyone's not saying anything.
Yeah.
You know? Like, or he's walking the streets and everyone's like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So
there's a lot of that, especially with social media allows you to get the fame. And
people never even have to see you do comedy and they can think you're a great comedian.
Yes. Yeah. And I've watched people get opportunities they're not ready for. And I feel sorry for them. Because I go, you obviously have talent.
It's not refined yet.
You're pulled. You also feel compelled to be in certain spaces because the industry tells you to be there. Where it's like, if you just took your time to learn your craft, you could be really great because you're great at getting the attention. So if you work on the craft, by the time you're ready to give people who are willing to give you that attention, you can retain and maintain a really great career.
And they can be your audience.
And they can be your audience for life.
Whereas
but
people
now,
see you online and they're like, ah, it's funny.
And they love you and they come watch you and it's like, oh, I can't do this again. It was nice seeing them live, but would I come again? No. It's unfortunate because we forget that these are lifelong pursuits.
Yeah.
Lifelong. And so...
And 10,000 hours, 10 minutes at a time.
Do you know
difficult.
What I mean? It's pretty fucking difficult. So... Yeah, man, it's just I don't judge them too hard now. I did before. I don't judge them too hard now because I understand the pressure of it. Because also people will jump on your train and go, hey, I love what you're doing. Let's do this and that and then and that. And it's, the money is coming in and the...
I feel like the Nationwide thing probably did that for a lot of people. And it's probably created a very weird space because personally, I'll say a lot of the people that were on Nationwide this time were just not ready. Almost.
Okay.
Like, you know, like they were maybe 6 months to a year before
they were
quite ready for it. But a lot of them still did well. Like,
did
you know,
well, yeah.
And
yeah.
It's only if you're a comedian you can see that they're like scared as shit. Like, you know,
okay, yeah.
And stuff like that. You know, they're not comfortable necessarily.
No, for sure.
And like, you know, some of the material might not be stuff that they'll be happy with in a year's
time
and stuff like that. but they're also the cool thing about Nationwide is that's what it's for. It's to show you
the young guys coming up,
The most polished. But I was worried that, like, for some of the comedians, that this is going to create like a very weird situation because people are new to the scene, still new to comedy, and now they're on TV, now they've got fame, now they've got all of this. And like you're saying, like, you feel like your skill set isn't necessarily maybe where your fame levels are, maybe. Like, and then same thing could be happening for other people, like, in that, you know? Like,
yeah, but comedy tends to give you what you deserve.
Okay.
On a strictly stand-up thing. So, you will... I don't think anyone got more than they deserved in terms of whatever came after Nationwide. Even if you told yourself things were going to blow up and you treated yourself like a... If you got an ego afterwards, chances are you didn't really get what you thought. You weren't Trevor famous. Like,
we all... everyone's done well off of it, so yeah.
Yeah, but...
Well enough.
But it's not... You remember how killing on... as industry people, killing on Letterman back in the days was your...
Made it.
Now you're touring.
Yeah.
Killing on Nationwide is not you touring. And it's very easy to think you are because Trevor's huge and you tell yourself, well, if Trevor's... And people watch Trevor and that means I've got Trevor's people.
How many people have Trevor?
No. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You are only going to get what you're going to get from Nationwide. And it's... And
because you can also leverage that depending on
you can leverage
your skill set and like all that stuff.
Yeah. So I think it's a great thing to have in the bag. Flip, it's just great to have a piece of something shot so well for yourself.
And on TV.
TV. And we also take for granted, like... Oh, it's going to sound so weird. But it's only because the industry is new. And it's not a criticism of South African audiences. But the audiences aren't the most sophisticated.
Sure.
So they loved it. Whatever it was, whether the guy was new or whatever, they loved it. They enjoyed it. They're not sitting there. South African audiences don't know Stuart Lee. If you show South African audiences Stuart Lee, they'd be bored as fuck. They'd just be like, what is this guy jibber-jabbering about? You know what I mean? So...
But I mean,
also,
I think even English audiences are like that with Stuart Lee to a degree.
Yeah. But like, comedy, it's self-filtering. It only gives you what you deserve in terms of comedy. I mean, like, you can get TV and then get popular.
And stuff like
but
that.
You only ever get what you deserve when you're doing comedy.
Fair enough. And then, you got Netflix, so what does that say about you?
Yeah, that Netflix thing.
It's been a weird one for you. Like, because I've chatted to you about it before, and you've never really spoken that confidently about it.
When I got the call out, my answer was no. I called Ryan Hardooth, chatted to him about it.
Give people some context. Ryan Hardooth is, like, the guy who gets a lot of people on in South Africa.
Yeah, he's like a real advocate and supporter and doer of stand-up comedy in South Africa.
Yeah.
From putting on shows to guiding young guys to...
I mean, he's been fairly instrumental in Trevor's career.
Trevor's promoter, on-the-road guy.
But even now, he's doing lots for lots of comedians, like yourself.
He's shooting a lot of specials. He shot my problem shot, Born Free special. So I called him as a mate, and it was like, okay, cool. If I can pull it off. For me, that was all I wanted from Netflix. It wasn't fame. It wasn't blow up in the world, because I've always been very conscious about where I am in my career. It was, if I could pull off something that you watch and you go, that was a half hour special.
Yeah.
Was it the best in the world? I don't care what your thing is, but you're not going, what the fuck did I just watch for half an hour? Why did that happen?
Which I'll tell you, quite a few,
I've watched some of those half hours.
I couldn't get through all of those.
Yeah. Some of them I was just like very disappointed in. So that was Gola always says at the points in your career where you always have to leap.
Yep.
And that was a point in my career where I felt stuck, and I was like, oh, leap. This might be a leap. Just in internally, what I need to do, can I put on a half hour special for the world in 3 months? Let's leap. And that's all I wanted from it, and I'm satisfied with it. I'm happy with
I
it.
I would be satisfied if I were you. It's a good show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So I put it on and I'm very happy with the product. And I never expected, I literally expect zero from it. I expect zero. So when I get DMs from people in Texas or fucking Italy, I'm just like, that's insane.
I see your Twitter accounts. I see people
hitting
up from all over the world.
So it's crazy for me. And I don't know how to sound more genuine when I say I really appreciate that you watched it. Just that they watched it. And the fact that they tweeted about it, I'm just like, that's crazy.
Yeah, I'm also on it. Like, even this podcast, man, like, it doesn't have tons of listeners, but, like, fuck, I appreciate that people take the time, you know, out of the day to listen to it.
Yeah.
You know? Same thing, like, with watching stuff, like, because we put so much effort into it.
Yeah.
But it's not guaranteed, man.
No.
An audience, you're not owning an audience.
No. That's it.
Like, you have to earn it, man. And, like, but that's the thing. Like, I feel like you've slowly but surely earned it, and I think maybe having a good head about it's why, like, you're getting these opportunities and why people want to work with you, because you're not, like, arrogant about it, and you are self-conscious about the fact, because I name one other South African comedian that would say no if they were asked to be on Netflix.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, you might say yes, but you might end up saying no down the road when it starts getting real. But yeah, look, it was also like one of those things where it's like you do it also to open that door.
Yeah.
To go
to put you on that level now.
No, to open that door for the industry. To go we're a thing. So that next time they go, we're doing another run of these things, they don't go skip South Africa.
So was that pressure?
Not as much pressure as just comedy, show. Yeah, as putting on a show.
Okay. So you weren't worried about that? You weren't like, I'm going to represent for like everyone back home?
No.
You're
going to
represent for myself, and this can help other people.
Yes. It's something that's in your head where you go, if we do this, this becomes a thing, which comes back to me again. Which still comes back to me, and I go, then I can go, maybe my next special I shoot for Netflix.
Yeah.
You know?
Sorry, can I please ask you to put your bag that side? My son is going to take it here. You won't even notice.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
So, welcome to Joburg.
Yeah.
So, it'll come back to me in terms of like, yeah, then it just becomes another option that we have in a country where we don't have many avenues and options. So we can't be messing it up for ourselves, which goes back to the beginning of this conversation, why these club gigs are important. We're messing it up for ourselves.
Because you're like, once again, audience doesn't trust you, and so they don't want to
clubs
come out.
Clubs die. We've had so many, clubs shut in the last year. We've lost so many shows in Joburg. Joburg was a place where you could gig twice a night all week.
Yeah, I remember that.
And now I'm probably going to be on stage again next week, maybe.
Yeah, but also a lot of those gigs were like 100, 200 bucks here and there, you know, like, you know, door money splits and stuff like that. So
I'm just talking about like
just being able to
the
perform.
Opportunity to jump on stage and perform.
Yeah.
Because we still have to build up to the point where comics can literally live on club comedy,
and we're not there in South Africa. Like,
no.
There's a handful of people who are living in club comedy, but
here's the thing: to get there is to build a relationship with the audience. It's not even about upping our level of comedy. South African comedians are good.
Yeah, there's a lot of good comedians out there.
But
you wouldn't know about conversation, but
yeah.
We like comedy.
Besides,
guys,
all the shit ones we keep running. But like, if we just curated the shows and built the culture so that audiences felt comfortable going out, I mean, like, because that's what we need, is to go, people will come out for comedy, we just need to put on a good show. Then we can start having places that are permanent and guaranteeing money for the comics. But if we keep treating tiny gigs like Poppies and Kitcheners like they're just tiny nothing gigs, and we forget that we're instilling culture into audiences, we'll never build an actual industry. Carla said it. He said, the problem with the South African industry is that there is no industry. But everyone thinks there are. Eh? Yeah, and people think there is an industry. It's like, no, there isn't. We're still building. And unless you got that build mentality, you're not helping anyone and you're not even helping yourself.
But then, like, obviously spaces like Melville Comedy Club, like, are helping with that. And other actual comedy clubs. I mean, I've never even been to Parkers.
Yes, the brick and mortar is helping, but if you're not... But if you're not...
But it's the pop-up gigs that you feel like are hurting the culture sometimes.
All of it. Even Melville Comedy Club. If comics aren't acting like it's... Like, that is an important thing for to build the culture beyond your own stand-up comedy, then there's no point in having a nice room. Then it's just a nice room that people don't come to.
But.
Do you know? So, yeah, go back to that mentality of like, yes, you're in it alone, but we do this together, but you, at the end of the day. So unless we're building the culture, we're riding the other guys' wave, really.
Yeah, fair.
Then we're just riding Trevor and because they blew it up for everyone. And they turned their spotlight into stand-up comedy, and we're just riding that little wave and then letting it die. And we're not building on it. We're not trying to go. What else is missing? So, the guys doing really important work out there. Like when Skumba does his Big Banger tour.
Yeah,
it's mad important, that thing.
Those things are so important. Like my people, our people have no fucking clue, dude. Like, I've been to a Skumba gig. It is unreal. It's more lit than, like, most, like, Jaws.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's crazy, bro. It's electric.
It's unreal.
So he's building, and a lot of guys, Mashabela and all those guys,
yeah.
are building whole... The KZN, the Zulu guys. Oh, my God. The things those guys are doing.
Dude, that's why it's so funny, like, being a part of the English scene, because we're all moaning all the time.
It's just the sad fuck everyone, actually, in the fucking English scene. We don't deserve comedy, actually. We just don't deserve it.
Once you've seen that, it does feel that way. But as much as comedy is a team sport, it also is an individual thing. And you do one-man shows, or you've been touring.
I'm trying.
You did Born Free-ish, that was your first one.
That was the first one.
How many times did you do that one?
I did it, the first time I did it was at the jazz club that closed down, Orbit Jazz.
Okay.
And that was the first time I was like, oh, stuff, it's a show. And then after that, I booked a theater. Well, I booked the Goliath Comedy Club.
What do you mean, like, you were like, oh, snap, it's a show?
Because all you have before is just a collection of jokes.
Sure, okay, so that's how you did it with Born Free. It wasn't like, you didn't have a concept. You just took the jokes you had.
I put, because when I write a show,
they just compile all the jokes.
All the jokes, yeah. But I try to. Some people can just say jokes. I can't remember just jokes. Everything has to link.
Yeah.
So at the time I did it, even the first time, it was like, I remember even Tats commenting on my piece of paper was like in three sections. And the sections were travel, home, language. Or whatever it was. So it was already like kind of a show where it's like, oh, there are 20-minute sections of this show rather than just like two-minute joke. And so when I saw that, I was like, oh, snap. This thing's it's a show. I think I can put this on. Yeah, so then I booked it and I did it at the Glides for a week, which was really...
But at that point...
That was crazy.
Like, where were you in your career at that point? Like, had you been on TV yet?
I think Bantu Hour was happening around then. No, that was LNN days. So I started featuring on LNN. I had just come off tour Nationwide. But I wasn't in the show because I was out of town when they shot the DVD one.
Yeah.
Which was one of those saving graces type thing.
Wow, did you not like the set?
No. It was a saving grace because I was way behind everyone else at the time. Robbie and Dylan and them were way ahead of me.
You were part of that class. And that class, your Dusty, Robbie,
and Dusty and them,
Dylan. That Nationwide was...
It was lit. Yeah. So I was definitely the opening act of that night. So I didn't want... I even knew then, I was like, I don't need to be recorded. It's fine that I missed this one.
Cool.
Yeah, it worked out.
But it
actually worked out because also I was doing Switzerland at the time, which opened other doors and
there
other opportunities.
There was that Montreux Fest, yeah.
Yeah. So that was, it worked out. Life worked out. So I never look back and I go, man, if I was on that DVD, where would life be?
Yeah, so that was still like, it was good timing though. It was like, you know, you'd had some good experience, you'd been on TV, you'd just done a run of theater shows, like trailer
yeah.
and stuff. So, and people kind of knew who you were a little bit.
Yeah, and I was getting tired of those jokes.
That's why you do one man sometimes.
Yeah.
I retired a bunch of stuff with my first one man. I only did that show once.
Yeah.
And I was cool, like, I'm done.
Done, yeah. But I was like, but you go, they're good jokes, so I need you to do them officially.
Yeah.
So that's what Born Fresh was. It was like, okay, I've grown out of these jokes. Let me do it, package it. It might not mean anything until 15 years and people go, hey, but did you see his first show? And then all of a sudden, Born Fresh matters. So
did you record it? No.
I did, yeah. It's on, I don't know, TV. I think it's called Catch Up.
Okay, DSTV Catch Up.
One of the, I don't know, there's so many packages.
I don't have a TV, so.
Okay, that makes the both of us. We're talking about a theory.
To be on TV.
Yeah, yeah. We're just trying. Oh, fuck. So, that was Born Freeish, which was, yeah, I did it.
And now you're doing Problem Child. How long have you been doing this one for?
Problem Child, I did for the first run beginning of this year, Marchish, in the theater there. And that was fun. I remember it was still I was still going through my anxiety attacks and stuff post Netflix and everything. So my head wasn't in the right place.
So
it
really fucked you up,
bro. Yeah, bro. I've had writer's block since then. I haven't written a new joke in a year.
Fuck.
Yeah.
That scares the shit out of me.
Yeah, I haven't written a new joke in a year, which is scary.
But thankfully, you've got a one bad show, that's already.
Yeah, luckily I'd already. But even leading up to Born Freeish, I'd already written half an hour of what would eventually be parts of Problem Child and some of the Netflix shows. So I had stuff with me. So by the time I did Netflix, also I had a lot of material to play with.
Wait, I'm like, let's actually just go back to the writer's block thing. What's the issue, man? Like, you know how jokes work?
I think a lot of it is...
Are you worried about not being funny? About the jokes not being good enough? About?
Yeah, I think good enough.
Yeah, that's my biggest fear.
I think I used to be able to try jokes because I just wanted to try the joke, but I don't even want to try the joke anymore.
Like, I've seen you, like, fuck with crowds and just be like, I don't care if you laugh at this is for me.
Yeah, so I just haven't been trusting them.
Are you worried about how people see you?
I think I just want to level up. I don't want to do anything that's on the same level that I've done before.
Fuck, I know how that feels. Like, when it comes to comedy, like, I worry. Like, I just want to be
better.
Next,
I just want to be. Yeah.
Like, I watch other guys, like, online, like, good stuff, and I just sound. How do I be as good as you?
Yes.
And I'm just like, I know how. I've got to keep writing, keep performing and stuff like that. But it's like, it's also, you have that fear. Well, me personally, I have that fear of, maybe I'll never be that good.
That scares the shit out of me. Because for me, there's no point doing anything in life unless you're willing to play with the best.
Yeah.
All right, then I've just wasted my life. I don't want to be mediocre. Especially at something the way it's like, it's a great opportunity to do it. I don't want to be, no man. I'd rather be a really good... I'd rather make really nice pots.
Be the best at that.
And be really... Be some of the one of the best at that than be a mediocre kind of famous comic.
But then we also, like, you know, that can lead to the... That this is, I think, what leads to, like, yeah, the anxiety and everything.
But that's fine. I just need to deal with it.
Because...
Honestly, it's...
A will for greatness can also...
Hinder you
with your insecurities of not being good enough. Like, you've got this level that you want to achieve, and it's like internal script, and also, like, you know, you see yourself in the mirror, you're like, I'm not that.
Yes.
Like, yeah, it's fucking hard to
it's hard. I mean, I try to talk to as many comics as I can just to get, like, some insights.
Shrink at all?
I tried and I don't like it.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm like, I know it's good and I would recommend it for others.
But it just doesn't work for you.
I just don't. I really enjoy fixing.
I don't like just talking about a thing. I'm just like, why are we talking about it if we're not trying to fix it?
But that's the thing with like therapy is you are trying to fix it.
No, but it's just too laid back. It's just too like, it's too passive a way of doing it. Because what I ended up trying was psychotherapy,
sure.
Which is more intense. It's like
psychoanalysis.
It's like, yeah, psychoanalysis, which is like, you can't just say something without getting a question
exactly.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Like he will question like.
And break it down.
Yeah, why? I didn't like my dad. Why don't you like your dad? Because then, but why didn't you think, oh, why do you, it's like, but even that, I was like, I don't have to fix things now. Like even with this anxiety, I just want to know that if I knew what I had to do, I'd feel much better. Even if you told me it'll take 10 years, I'd be like, oh, is that what I have to do for the next 10 years consistently? Oh, okay, cool. It's the not knowing what to do. It's not
like
knowing how
to
level up.
Write jokes before more.
Ah, fuck off.
I mean, isn't that the whole thing?
That is the whole thing.
But sometimes, like, that, sometimes that isn't enough. I mean, lots of people write jokes
Maybe I should go back to therapy.
Stick. Fuck. Maybe. Might help a little. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, if you're suffering from writer's block and anxiety, like, I do think maybe some professional help might help a little bit. Because that stuff can be debilitating, man. And definitely no one wants that for you. But the cool thing is, like, at least you're still able to fucking perform. It's not, like, affecting that. Is it?
Yeah. Do you know what I found is I'm mad. Like, everything is still great on stage. Everything is great on stage. The flow is there.
Because you're a good actor.
The jokes are there. I can riff. For a long time, even though I wasn't writing, I'd just get on stage and riff, and I was working, and that was frustrating because I wasn't getting gags out of it, because it was just like in the moment things, you know. Just
yeah, you can't repeat those.
And you can't repeat those kind of things. So it was like I didn't lose the funny, but I just like I lost my process, and I think a lot of it is just going back to what worked. I think on your way, I was having this conversation with Don yesterday. You start adopting other people's things because you think that. But this is what the greats were doing, and it's like, yeah, but that's what worked for them.
Yeah.
Like, go back to what worked for you. And I won't lie, it's also, man, Chris Rock said it. He said he was fortunate to not be famous for a long time.
Yeah, he got to suck for a long time.
He got to
he
suck
says,
for a
like,
really long time.
Yeah.
And I think
I don't know if I believe
I
he
got,
ever sucked, but
I got a spotlight on me very quickly. May not be their spotlight, you know. It's not. I'm not mad famous, but once you have the spotlight on you, the self-consciousness creeps in a lot quicker. But I need to go be conscious of it and then go, all right, but just operate in a way as if you no one's watching you again. Operate in a way where you're still trying to prove yourself again. Because I was talking to Tats and he said he never realized it. Nah, I put it in his head.
But Tats feels like, Tats to me seems like he's always just like being successful and like sees himself at that level.
Yes. Yeah. Tats's state of mind I've always wanted.
Yeah. 100%.
Like I envy his state of mind.
I wish I had that kind of self like image like with myself.
Like, I always think to myself, one day I'll click like Tats. Literally, that's the thing that plays in my head. I'm like, one day I'll click like Tats. Because I watched him click over. Like, Tats was good. And then around the time we went to Montreal, and he even admits it, this was 2014, he clicked into himself. Where he operated from the ether. He was just operating from this place of absolute freedom and absolute Tatsness.
Yeah.
And that just leveled up his comedy. It broadened what he could do. It eased him up on stage, and I was just like, maybe one day, I don't know when it is, man, I can't wait until I just click into myself and I become myself on stage.
And that's crazy because he's like a peer of yours essentially.
No way, he's ahead of me.
Is he?
Yeah. Tets has been doing comedy way
Eleven.
Anyway,
okay.
We love
we
working together now.
He's found his success.
Yeah, he's found his
at
success.
The right time.
Yeah. He's doing like Tets can do what he wants on stage. I've seen that guy dig the deepest holes where I'm just like...
With the audience.
Where literally I'm like, Tats has ruined the night. Not even his set. Tats has ruined the night. And then by the end, he's got a standing ovation. I watched him fight with a girl.
That's what I was saying. Like, he can do that. He can fuck with the audience. Like,
he can
piss off the audience
piss
and then
them
get
off,
them back.
Bro. So, yeah, man.
So yeah,
it's
what did
a journey, this thing. I think that's what you got to remember. With everything we do, all our frustrations, our dreams, our hopes, our hang-ups, we just got to step back and go, I was never supposed to be anywhere but here at this point. You know what I mean? Like, I just got to keep going at it, because the only way to fail at this thing is to quit at it, or to stop trying to stop learning it.
Sure. I mean, what? Yeah. Or, I mean, I don't know if quitting is necessarily failing, because maybe for some people it's the correct decision, you know? And like,
Never your thing, sure. If you were.
You can hit a point in your life where you realize that it's not going where you want it to go. And like, you know, take those same skills into other aspects. You know, people can become writers, you know, for other comics and stuff like that. But maybe if you've always got that, like, will in your heart, then yeah, you might feel.
Yeah, if the will is still there, do that thing, man.
Yeah, man. So what's next?
I don't know, man. I'm trying to write jokes, bro. I'm trying to write jokes.
Bro, this has been the most, like, mind-fucking thing. Like, to hear you, like, say that, like, you're... But I get it. I totally get it, man. Like, fuck, even nowadays, like, I'm still, some days, like, I'm on Twitter and I'm like, just think of something funny, bro. Just make a joke. Just make a fucking joke.
Oh, wow, you even tried that? I gave that up a long time ago. Writing for Twitter, I suck so hard at it.
I once a year, I get like the 1,000 retweets, and I'm just like, yes. Every day, I'm like, 10 times, like, just trying, like, and it just never hits. And then, like, and then, but that's what's like, the thing,
is
like,
is
I don't
this even my audience? Who are these people following me? Because they don't care.
I don't want to put too much effort into Twitter, because then it hurts more.
Yes.
Like, when you put in the efforts and you think it's a good joke, and nobody responds to it, and you're just like, yo.
When you're refreshing, when you're pulling that thing down, and you're like, the whole day. Oh, no.
Oh, man. This is a brutal, brutal sport, eh?
It really is. It really is, man. And it's really brutal here, because you're not supported by a system.
Yeah.
Like, in the States, you at least you know, I have to do this, and then I get that, and then I do this.
There's a path to headline.
There is a path. And here... Shit, man. I've seen people go 1 year trying comedy, to the next year selling out town halls. And here I am going back to East London again, selling 80 tickets in a 400 seater. And I go, what?
But that's in East London, and you're trying to build an audience there. You're not selling 80, you're not doing the same thing, you know, here in Joburg, are you?
No, the numbers are better here.
Yeah.
But also,
but it's like, building an audience, and you know that.
But 80 people.
Don't book a 400 seater next time. East London, what? There's only like 700 people that live there anyway. So
it's not even about the number 80.
Yeah.
It's about, why don't people come to experience, and not just me. I'm talking all acts. Everyone who's good and has struggled to sell tickets.
Yeah, we were chatting earlier about Gwala, like,
yes,
how sometimes his rooms are half empty, and he's doing London,
it's
he's
about
doing a week for 400 people.
Yes, yeah. He's doing a week in a 400 seater, and he knows he's going to sell it. But he comes here, and it's like, it's just frustrating to go, what am I not to you?
Because Luis Gwala is... He had his own TV show. Yeah, it's like
named after him on
a free station
for years.
Yeah, but
we had Dave Kubuka writing on it, and Kahizulu Dika directing.
Shit, boy. Fuck, I loved it. LNN was great.
And this man is struggling to sell tickets.
So how does that make you feel, dude?
So
like,
it's just frustrating because
you see other people.
Because it's not even about seeing other people. It's like,
I
want
to
give you a nice thing. I've worked hard on this nice thing, and I want you to have it. Why don't you want it?
You gotta let go of that. Just create the nice thing, and whatever the results are, the results.
Yo, fuck your philosophy, man.
Create for yourself, motherfucker.
Fuck your philosophy, man. I got to perform my table, man. No, but it's just like, because then I just go... It's a question of, it goes back to that thing. I just need to know what I need to do. And if what I need to do is not go back to East London, then it's cool. If I can figure out strategically, like, oh, I'm wasting my time going back to East London. What I need to be doing is building this here and doing this there. And then one day I can go back to East London, maybe in 10 years time, whatever, it makes sense. But I'm at a point where I'm at a point in my career where I don't know what to do next. And I think that's my frustration. It's like, I just like, oh, what happens
what
here?
What do you want to do next?
I want to write new, better shows. And I want to create something really dope on TV, but it's just hard to get.
What
it's hard
to
get things that don't have mamas and cocos and.
So there's YouTube.
Yeah, there is YouTube.
And there's many different funds in this country if you want to create stuff, like genuinely, like just apply
really?
To different. Yeah, just apply to different arts like councils and you
okay.
can get funding.
I just need to stop bitching and moaning.
Yes.
And start doing.
Yes.
Because nobody cares.
This is like work harder.
Work harder, bro.
Nobody cares. Man, this has been such an enlightening conversation and like not at all the way
you thought it was going to go.
Yeah, and I love it though because I feel like this is important for people listening. You know, because my audience for this podcast is a lot of up and coming creatives.
Yeah.
You know, people who are looking at people who have gotten a little bit further in the career, in the industries that they're in, or even other industries, and you know, trying to take lessons from those people.
Yeah.
And so I think this is going to be an eye opener for people, man. And I really appreciate you sharing all of this because fuck, it's real.
Thanks, man.
So,
I hope it's of value.
I definitely think it's of value. And yeah, man, thank you so much for the time. It does bring us to the end. If people want to find you, where can they do that?
Loiso Madinga on all platforms, except for TikTok. I don't get this TikTok thing.
We're
it makes
old.
Me feel old,
We're
bro.
Too old. You're in your 30s, right? You're 30,
yeah,
32. 30, okay, 32. Oh, same age as me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm never getting caught
on TikTok. I
don't get
it.
I'm too old.
And Gary Vaynerchuk is telling us to get onto TikTok. And I'm like, Gary, I don't understand it. I don't know how you as a 40-something are getting this thing. I've downloaded it. I have watched what's happening. And I don't understand why it's happening to me.
I appreciate it. Some of that shit's hilarious. Y'all are great at that.
I
can't fucking do that. Not for me. Thank you very much. But cool. So everywhere except TikTok.
Everywhere except TikTok.
Thanks for your time, bro.
Thank you, my man.